Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest and You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Scan any New Hampshire tourism brochure and you're bound to see at least one photo of a gracefully weathered barn nestled in a bucolic landscape. But 2 years ago, the New Hampshire Preservation Alliance warned that the state was losing barns at the rate of almost one a day. That prompted new efforts focused on keeping these historic structures from disappearing. Repair and maintenance, however, can be really expensive. So some barn owners are coming up with ways to repurpose these properties so they're useful for the way people live today. Today in The Exchange, the why and how of preserving old barns. And let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or call in 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests. John Porter is here, co-author of Preserving Old Barns, Preventing the Loss of a Valuable Resource. John also served as the dairy specialist for UNH Cooperative Extension for 30 years. And John, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome.
Also with us, Ian Blackman, co-owner of Ian Blackman LLC, which specializes in restoring and preserving historic barns and houses. And Ian, good to meet you too. Thank you for being here.
Pleasure to be here, Laura.
Also with us, Beverly Thomas, program director for the New Hampshire Preservation Alliance, where she manages the Old House and Barn Program. And Beverly, thanks for your time.
It's great. Thank you for having us.
So I'm going to start with you, Beverly, since you are the head of this Old House and Barn Program. But ask everybody, why do you love old barns so much, Beverly?
Barns are amazing structures, and they help connect us to our agricultural heritage. New Hampshire had a great history of agriculture. We developed with an agricultural background. We're losing that. We're losing farms daily. And it's just great to have these structures here that give us that link back to this heritage.
And your group was the one that put out that number about 2 years ago, Beverly, that the state was losing almost one barn a day. I was really struck by that. Is that still the case?
It is still the case. On average, barn and a half a day, really.
Wow.
And that is a lot. And we estimated there are about 15 to 20,000 barns in New Hampshire currently. That number is maybe in 60 years we might have lost all our historic barns. So we're trying really hard at the New Hampshire Preservation Alliance and with other partnering organizations to save the barns.
So, Ian, you work with these barns. Why do you love them so much? How do they sort of speak to you?
Well, I put this time of year when I look at, you know, leaf peepers are coming up and,
right.
and the leaves are turning. And I always tell people they're not just coming up to see the leaves. You know, they're coming up to see New England. And part of New England is those barns. And so when you're driving around the landscape, I always tell people to, you know, look at the architecture as you're driving by and sort of blot out that barn that's connected to that house. And then think about what it would look like without that barn. And so they have a big impact, and they have a big impact economically on the state because they mean a lot to tourism and other things and that make them important. And I love them, obviously, because I think they're beautiful structures. And I get to meet some really wonderful people working on them.
What makes you feel they are beautiful?
Well, it's partly that sort of connection to the past that Beverly was talking about. And it's also partly that they're just unusual structures most of the time. And they're built very well. You know, they obviously, we talk about losing them, that over time they have problems. But they're just different. They just it's not just a house that people were living in. It's a place where people were working. You know, and that's important.
And where animals live. So
and where animals live, sure,
a little
sure.
Bit different too.
That's right. You drive down the center aisle of an old Yankee barn, and you'll see, you know, raised hard knots. You know, and the softwood around there is all sunken down. That's from years of hooves just walking down that barn, and that's a pretty neat thing. You know, I mean, I remember working on a barn back of it's back of Dick's Sporting Goods, Concord Heights. And that barn, and if you drive back there, that barn's still there in beautiful shape. And, of course, it's such a changed area now. But if you went down the center aisle of that barn, the queen posts are the posts on either side of the center aisle. And the farmer had obviously bought a Super C or some John Deere tricycle front-end tractor because it has a longer axle. And he had cut out big scoops out of those posts because he couldn't fit that tractor
in.
Oh,
my goodness. You can tell what he did. Who knows how long ago?
Right, and that was with the changing history of agriculture and stuff like that, but that's kind of neat to see.
Well, I'm definitely going to ask you guys all a little bit later, when you look at these barns, what they tell us about how agriculture changed from the early days of colonial settlement, you know, all the way up to pretty recently. But to you also, John Porter, why do you love old barns? What pulls you to them?
Well, I grew up on a dairy farm in Lebanon, New Hampshire, and I always tell people I probably spent more of my life in an 1850s barn than I did the house. And I grew up right beside my dad doing chores, and so I grew up in these barns. And then through my career, I've been a dairy specialist and done a lot of work advising people on how to make these barns more efficient to keep up with the changing things in technology. And so I call barns a constructed landscape. I figure the mountains and the fields are the purest, but the barns are next. And they're just a natural part. They're not as pure as mountains and fields, but it's part of New Hampshire.
Well, and I was lucky enough to be up north twice in the last month, just for various reasons. And as you were speaking, John, I was thinking about those views that you get, especially after you drive through Franconia Notch, you enter the North Country, and you're right. There's the mountains, there's the hills, there's the fields, but there's the barn, and it fits, doesn't it?
Right.
Just makes us feel like, okay, this is all right.
Yeah.
I want to invite our listeners to join us. We've got a lot of people already wanting to jump in to talk about this, but our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter if you'd like. It's NHPR Exchange. Or, of course, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Today, the hows and whys of preserving old barns. So what counts, Beverly, in your opinion, as a barn? Does a sugar shack count? Does a chicken coop count? I mean, what's a barn and what isn't?
That's a very good question, because the tax incentive program for barns actually includes all agricultural structures. So anything that relates to a farmstead that supports agriculture, we consider. I mean, they're not technically called barns. When we say barn, we think of the big dairy barns. But all these other agricultural structures, the sugar houses, the chicken coops, all that sort of fall in a subcategory.
What do you think about that, Ian? What counts in your mind as a barn?
Well, all those things. I, of course, kind of like timber frame barns the best, because that's kind of what I tend to work on the most. But corn cribs are in there too, and sometimes the earliest structure that survived over time on a farm is the corn crib. You know, that's been changed for a lot of different uses. And but all those things that were used for agricultural uses, but also in Concord, the village barn, you know, those count as barns too.
Okay, now I'm going to show my lack of barn expertise. What's a corn crib? What does it look like?
Oh, it's like a small. I mean, what would be average size, John?
Oh, like maybe 15 by 15 or 12 by 14 or something, and usually angled sides and slatted sides so the corn can dry.
Okay. All right. See, now I know. So you mentioned, Beverly, the tax incentives to help people preserve these old barns. And for the past 15 years, state law has allowed cities and towns to grant property tax relief to barn owners who can demonstrate, quote, public benefit of preserving their barns. So what is the public benefit, Beverly?
Usually the barn has to be within view of a public right-of-way, a road or a waterway. So most of these, or it could be on the National Register or somehow historically significant within the community.
So you have to be able to see it from the road.
Yeah, that's one of the three. If it could be, it could still qualify if it's back off the road and you can't see it, but it's of historic significance or significance locally.
And how does the public benefit from that? Because, you know, when one group gets taxpayer relief, sometimes, you know, from a city or town perspective, money is limited. So if barn owners get a little relief, somebody else might have to make up that relief. So what is the public benefit? Make the case there that it's
the sense of community, helping to maintain the sense of community, the agricultural community, these small towns. Also, quite often, if an owner maybe doesn't get any type of tax relief, that barn may fall into disrepair and eventually fall down. And so then there's no tax money coming into the town. But barn will actually go away.
Interesting. I'd love to hear from everybody on this. Go ahead, Ian.
So I think the benefit also is that importance of the landscape and to the economic the health of the community. You know, communities that don't take care of their architecture, their historic structures, they tend not to do as well, I think, when the economy isn't doing as well, specifically in a tourist area, because people don't, you know, you want to see those structures. You know, think of a town that loses its meeting houses and loses its old grange halls and stuff like that. You lose your barns, too. That makes a big, big difference, I think, in how people react to the area.
What do you think, John?
Well, New Hampshire is a big tourism state, and people don't come here to look at a commercial strip or a mall.
Or Dick's Sporting Goods.
Right. Yeah, they come to see scenery. And I think the barns are just dotted around our countryside, and they create that atmosphere that people want to see when they come to New Hampshire. And so our farmers, without being paid or anything, just in their normal living, are creating the setting that appeals to tourists.
So help people out a little bit in terms of tax incentives to preserve these properties, and that makes your town overall a more beautiful place that people want to stop and, you know, post a picture of themselves on Instagram in front of this beautiful barn.
Right, that's right.
All right, let's go to our listeners, 1-800-892-6477, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter. It's NHPR Exchange. And Alyssa writes in. She says, we are transplants from Chicago. We took on 18-plus acres in Barrington, New Hampshire, on an old dairy farm. We love our barn and are incredibly committed to its continued structural success, and there's been no state support to help us retain the historic structure as it stands. Alyssa says, I'm concerned that funds in New Hampshire for these working barns have seemed to dry up. There seems to be a lack of city and state commitment to the average, just average in quotes, yet historic structure. So I'd love to hear what our state representatives have in mind to truly save working properties that were made, maintained, and continue to serve a purpose in New Hampshire's agricultural identity and future. And Alyssa, thank you very much for the email. I think we're kind of heading in that direction anyway. So go ahead, John. What do you think about Alyssa's email?
Well, because we do have what we call a barn assessment program grant. So people can get help on having someone come in, have a barn contractor come in, set the priorities of what needs to be done. Now, in the past, we've attempted to go to the legislature and get money for fixing up barns. But there's always that big thing of, you know, public support and private benefit. And like you say, money's tight, and then they start putting us up against nursing homes and drug addiction and so forth, then the barn thing looks kind of minor. So to this point, we can help on assessing it, but it's still up to the individual to come up with the money to fix it.
So there's a little property tax relief for the process of assessing. So I come to your house, John, and say, okay, this barn looks, you know, the floor looks good, the sides look good, the roof looks bad, you know, a little bit of rot. I mean, and then this is how much it's going to cost you, John, to fix these problems.
Correct. They'll get a report from this, and it's an assessment grant that they get from the Preservation Alliance, which is donated money.
And I'm guessing, Ian, that a lot of this is a pretty hefty bill. Some of these old barns have, you know, water damage, insect rot, who knows?
Right. And so that is part of the problem, is you can get a recipe sort of that tells you what you need to fix your barn, but there's still the costs.
Yeah, here's the recipe for the cake.
Here's the recipe.
You go buy the ingredients.
Right. Sometimes I feel like the undertaker when I go and look at a barn. But you know, the help is there to at least steer people in the right direction. But there's a big difference between public and private, you know, and that barns. There is money for you know, sort of nonprofits and barns, you know, like I did the Goss barn over in Rye that had moose plate money that went into that.
That's LCHIP, right? Land and Community Heritage Investment Program, or is that separate? Okay.
Separate.
Yeah.
Separate. I think moose plate money, there has to be an agricultural use for the barn, where LCHIP, it can be different. The difference between New Hampshire, I think, and which is one of the things I'd love to point out, in Vermont, is that Vermont, their LCHIP money can go to a private barn owner. They have a grant program for private barn owners. They have to meet certain criteria about whether the barn is still in agricultural use or sort of on the view plane and makes a big difference to the community to be saved.
It's that public benefit that we talked about.
It makes a big difference, though, because even if it's a little bit amount of money, you know, it's matching grants, that it's seed money and it gets people started down that right path. The evaluations that happen through the Preservation Alliance, those are huge in helping people start down that right path. And sometimes it's little things that get people to, you know, make the problem from getting worse. So those are worthwhile. I would love to see that change happen in this state where some LCHIP money could go towards, because they are important to our economic health.
And I know you want to jump in, Beverly. I got to ask you, though, Ian, you said sometimes you feel like an undertaker when you come onto these sites. What do you mean by that?
Well, because you come on that site and you're evaluating the barn and you realize that the people just don't have the wherewithal, you know, the finances to make that happen. So you try and steer them in directions where they can do small things to help. But, you know, sometimes you realize that it's not going to happen for them.
You say it's going to be $10,000, and they say, look, Ian, I don't have $10,000.
So. Right, and that's just a sad thing to have to say.
Go ahead, Beverly.
And Ian says he feels like an undertaker. I feel like the counselor or educator. Quite often, new owners of historic barns have no idea where to start. And they think that it's going to take $100,000 to fix their barn. And I say, just calm down. Let's get an assessment done. And maybe the barn's not as in bad condition as you think. Maybe it only needs to replace one post or something. And it's not that difficult. So I try to, like, start at the beginning. If we can do an assessment or just have a barn contractor go out and talk to them, they learn so much by having these contractors go out on site. And a lot of the times, I just say, keep the water out of your barn, no matter what it takes. If you have one shingle missing, don't wait 5 years to save the money to redo the whole roof. Just replace one shingle, even if it's a pink shingle that you found at the dump. You know, keep the water out.
You agree with that, John?
Oh, yeah. The little things count. And sometimes people are overwhelmed, and we tell people, even do it piecemeal. You know, if a roof is bad, you know, fix that little piece. And don't worry about what it looks like. You've just got to protect that wood. This is wood that's 150, 200 years old, and as soon as it's exposed, it absorbs water like a sponge. And so you just got to do the little things, slapping on plywood, slapping on metal. If it looks bad, don't worry about it.
So do you deal with this with people you talk to? The sticker shock, you know? I've got this beautiful structure. Oh, my gosh. Ian just told me it's $20,000.
Well, I do more like what Beverly does, more the education part. Ian's the nitty-gritty builder fella, so right. He comes in with the numbers.
Go ahead, Ian.
Well, so one of the important things, and one of the things that the Preservation Alliance supplies is, like I said, steering people down the right path. So when we talk about the small things you can do to help a barn, for example, keeping the roof in good shape. If a roofer comes along and says to you, this is just an example, and says, hey, we're going to re-roof the barn, we want to cover it with plywood before we put a roof so we have better nailing. If that barn has had moisture problems and has sunk and has fallen and has problems with the joinery up above and they put plywood on, then that all has to come off to fix that barn because it acts like a big gusset, so you can't pick up that barn to straighten it out anymore. So the Preservation Alliance steers people in that right direction about what they can do to do the right band-aid.
Straighten it out, because sometimes you see these barns, Ian, and they look saggy.
Right, so the big sag.
It's part of the charm,
right,
though.
Well, it is part of the charm, but if you put plywood in that big sag and then you try and straighten it to a straight line, The circle, the sag, is longer distance than the straight line, so you can't pick it up.
All right. Well, coming up, as we talk about, you know, some of the costs and what's involved, let's look at why bother to do this if you're not a farmer, as most people in New Hampshire today are not. We'll look at some of the ideas for repurposing old barns, and we'll start taking a lot of your calls. So stay on the line, 1-800-892-6477. Emails are great, too. Exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook or Twitter is NHPR Exchange. We'll be right back.
Support NHPR today and get entered to win a trip to Nashville, Tennessee. Catch a show at the legendary Grand Ole Opry, stroll along the Music City Wall of Fame, or see where Dolly Parton, Johnny Cash, and Elvis Presley made music history. Give as an NHPR sustainer, and you're entered into all our drawings, including a once-in-a-lifetime trip to Australia or New Zealand. Don't wait. Become an NHPR sustainer today at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, why preserve old barns? Many people love to see these in our landscapes, but they can be expensive to repair and maintain. We're finding out about New Hampshire's stock of old barns, how it's disappearing, and who's trying to save it. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. John Porter is here, co-author of Preserving Old Barns, Preventing the Loss of a Valuable Resource. He grew up working in a dairy barn. Ian Blackman is with us, owner of Ian Blackman LLC, specializing in restoring and preserving historic barns and houses. And Beverly Thomas, program director for the New Hampshire Preservation Alliance, where she manages the Old House and Barn Program. And all of you, let's go to our listeners. And Jill's calling from Concord. Hi, Jill, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. I'm just calling because I wanted to remind our listeners that while our historic barns are beautiful to look at, they're often filled with a variety of nasty chemicals that need to be handled properly. I serve as the senior environmental planner for the Nashua Regional Planning Commission, and in that capacity, I run our household hazardous waste program. And those are great opportunities for people who have historic barns and have materials that can't go into the regular trash to dispose of the things that they find in their barn properly. So just wanted to remind folks that there are oftentimes things that have been sitting in barns for quite a while that really should be handled carefully.
Really important point, Jill. Thank you very much. And got a slightly different question for everybody on this. But Ian, what about Jill's point that sometimes in these barns there's chemicals that are not acceptable to us today?
Sure. Well, and she's right. I mean, we did a barn up in New Hampton. It was an old apple orchard the barn was at. And it had lots of chemicals in that barn. And we had Clean Harbors came and they barreled it up and took it away. You have to be aware of those things.
How hard is it, John, to get barns, if you want to preserve them, up to sort of modern code?
Well, it depends what you mean on modern code. If it's building specifications and if you have a specific use, that can vary by town. And that's where some people have had some trouble because the building inspectors don't understand this old construction. And a lot of these old barns, they actually were overbuilt, but they weren't built with stamped lumber. So a lot of these new building contractor and inspectors don't really know how to interpret this.
What does that mean, overbuilt?
Well, they didn't have engineering. So they used, 6x6s, 8x8s, 10x10s. And you could have a long span without support. And they were strong, and they've obviously proved the test of time. So they were built extra strong because they didn't know how to engineer them. So they wanted to be sure they would last. A friend of mine used to say engineering is building something so it just barely stands up.
So these farmers from many, many years ago didn't have that expertise, so they were actually extra super careful and sure. They didn't want the barn falling in on their horses and sheep and
cows. They were. No, they used huge timbers, and it was just to be sure. Then they knew it was rugged. They had kind of a tried and true, kind of a plan that worked on these. And then they often were specialized joinery groups, joiners, who joined the building crew and did the detailed joinery, and then the local farmers would assemble it and put it up.
So I'm guessing in terms of modern code and some of the environmental issues that our caller brings up, it also, John, probably depends on what you want to do with the old barn. If you just want to use it to, store things, that's one thing. If you want to open it up to, public use for weddings and so forth, that's another thing.
No, that's right, because in the building code, there's an appendix that gives some exceptions for agriculture. And so they wouldn't have to do like sprinkling and, some of those kind of things. But as soon as you move into, human use and people populating it, that triggers something else.
Yeah, Beverly, do you want to jump in on this?
Sure. I mostly deal with private property owners. So people that are rehabilitating their barn for their own use.
For their own use.
For
They're
their
not
own
planning
use.
On
so
making
they don't
an event
usually
space.
Have code issues. But certainly the environmental concern with nasty chemicals and things, if they find them in their barn, they need to deal with those properly.
Ian?
Well, so code issues, the code changes town by town, which John was pointing out. You know, we've done barns where they've been being converted for event space, whether it be weddings or things like that. And you need to deal with the fire department to come in and do an inspection to make sure you get the right egress types of doors and stuff like that. It's usually not that difficult, you know. And, you know, we did Prescott barn for Prescott Farm up in Laconia, and we had to add some, you know, egress doors with Panic Hardware. And
what does that mean, egress doors?
Well, doors at the public. So if you're inside, you're having an event, the big old sliding barn door is not considered a sort of an egress in a panic situation unless you leave it open. So if you want to close it, if it's like fall and it's getting cold out, then you have to have doors that people can go, you know, in and out, just pushing against them, not having to slide.
Like
them
in case there's a fire, people need to get out quickly instead of messing around with a sliding door.
And that's correct. You know, when John talks about overbuilt, though, a lot of these barns were overbuilt. The barn we did in New Hampton had the timbers, the length of the barn, 50 feet was the length of that barn, and they were single, meaning there was no joint in them, and the timber was a 50-foot-long hewn timber. And that's one of the things, I'm just going to go back to what I love about these structures, is that that timber, that barn was built in 1783. So when you think about the tree, when that was a sapling, when that timber, you know, the tree that provided that timber was probably a sapling in the 1500s.
Wow,
so
yeah.
So think about that. Think about how the landscape has changed, and so that's why they're kind of special, you know.
Let's take another call. Thank you for that one, Jill. And Patty is in North Sutton. Hi, Patty, you're on the air. Welcome. Go ahead.
Thanks. Oh, I have an old barn. I live in the center of North Sutton. And I just thought I'd call because I love my barn. And about maybe 15 years ago, I had an angle iron to tie it together. And we used to have horses. And now there's a cat living there. But it's in good shape. Yeah, I know.
Cat's a little easier to take care of than a horse. Why do you love it so much, Patty?
I think I moved up from Massachusetts. I don't know what it is, but it's a beautiful old barn, and it has stone foundation, and then it's only 1870, which now seems really young compared to what I've heard, but it just smells good. There's still hay in it.
What do you do with it, Patty, besides the cat? What do you use it for?
I don't want to say. Well, we have a car in there.
Okay.
And I have, you know, an old pony car, you know, things like that, mainly for storage.
Okay.
But I didn't want to lose it. And I noticed that it was bowing out, as I say, a number of years ago. And I don't know who came, but I had an angle iron to pull it together.
All right.
And the very bottom is all, you know, dirt.
Well, Patty, thanks for the call. And, you know, this raised a question I wanted to ask all of you. John, how do you see people using these old barns today? So Patty uses it for storage. Ian talked about, you know, another barn that's used for a public use, events and so forth. How do you see people using these buildings?
Well, this is really the base problem of barn preservation. In the days when the barn was used for what it was built for, the farmer kept up with it. He fixed it. Like my father had an 1850s barn. The back wall went. We put in new cement blocks and new foundations. As the roof needed to be fixed, we fixed it. Because it was part of our livelihood.
You had to fix it.
Right. And now these barns aren't part of anybody's livelihood. And probably 80% of the barns in New Hampshire are just dead storage and not really having a real purpose. So it's harder for people to justify that expense for this building just sitting there. And it's probably got their, you know, son-in-law's furniture and somebody else's car and everything else. I mean, it's amazing. These
and
things,
a cat.
They're
like
chock
Patty.
Full. They're chock full. They really are, a lot of these. And in fact, there's some people I've actually advised them to remove stuff from the building so it would stand up better because it was overloaded.
Wow.
I mean, some of these are just chock full of stuff.
So they become sort of beautiful storage sheds? Is that what most
of
these barns are
happening.
Doing?
Now, part of the thing we work with is some creative reuse ideas. You know, how can we, you know, use these and get some value out of them. And, you know, there is a little resurgence of small-time farming. And we tell people if they are doing animal agriculture, I'd rather see them keep the animals out of the building, even though that's what they were designed for, build a cheap pole barn, and then use your old barn for storing your hay, your grain, your shavings, or use it for the front of a farm stand. But these old barns don't adapt well to equipment and running water and all those kind of things we have today. And so getting some things removed from the barn and using them for dry storage is sometimes a better option.
Well, and some of the barns that you mentioned, John, that are, you know, stuffed to the gills with stuff, it sounds like a fire hazard.
It could be. Some is just old iron, parts, car parts. You know, I've just seen them just literally the beam sagging due to storage.
Wow. I'd love to hear from listeners on this item that you mentioned, John. You know, how can people creatively reuse old barns? So exchange listeners, what do you think about that? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Okay, so when I think of creative reuse, I'm not thinking of storage. Beverly, and maybe you too, Ian, I'm thinking of those beautiful barn theaters that hold summer stock. I was at the Peterborough Barn Theater a couple weeks ago. I've been to the one in New London. It's gorgeous. I mean, I'm sort of going all the way here in terms of creative
Tamworth
reuse.
Tamworth has another one too. But there have been reuses. I'm thinking of Hollis Community, the Lawrence Barn in Hollis, which is a community space. The town got together. There was a double English barn, old from the 1700s, that needed to go away for they were developing the land, and the property owner, the barn owner, wanted to or did donate it to the town, and then they redeveloped it into a fabulous community space. There's antique stores, gift shops. I spoke with the owner of a yoga studio up in Sandwich.
Barn yoga.
A barn, yeah, beautiful spot, beautiful spot. And these the CSAs love to use them for their
community-supported agriculture.
Yeah, the community-supported agriculture. And I've found with a lot of our recent barn assessment grant applicants, young couples are starting up these micro farms and using them for either storage for the farm or distribution for their CSAs, but also for smaller animals like goats and chickens. So there's a lot of that I'm finding going back into these barns.
So for some of those bigger uses, like the yoga studio, like the community center, I went to a wedding last year at a barn that was gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. I'm guessing that's where some of the real money has to come in, though, Beverly.
That is true. The special event sites, farm to table, those are all sort of really putting a lot of money into these barns. There are some federal tax credits if your barn is on the National Register. There's a barn in Northampton, Hubbington Furniture, who redid a beautiful barn and uses it as his furniture store now, and it did a fabulous job, and he adores his barn, more so now than when he first bought it.
Yeah. Ian, go ahead. What are some of the more creative uses you've seen for these old structures?
Well, I think of a throwback brewery over on Route 1 on the seacoast. You know, and that was a beautiful farmhouse. It was two big barns put together, and they turned it into, you know, a brewery and restaurant, I believe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's right on Route 1, and it's really nice to see that still standing. The Goss Barn in Rye, where it became community gardens. But those things, you know, those are things that are, you know, not as many of those are going to happen, obviously, as there are barns out there that are in private use. So what is the private use? What is the private thing that's going to make people really want to save their barn?
Yeah, so talk about that a little bit more. You know, and John made a great point. When he and his dad were working in the barn, it was in their economic interest to repair it. But now, if you don't really have that direct economic interest, what do you do with it so it's useful?
Well, so I think for a lot of people, when they move to New England and they buy that farmhouse, small house, and barn, you know, they're connected and what have you, it's because they love that type of architectural structure. So they're going to take care of it just because they love that, you know, and they love that history. And let's not knock storage completely. I mean, it's nice to have the storage. But also, when people buy those structures, there's also an issue when you need to maintain them as well because of your homeowner's insurance and stuff like that. And that becomes an issue down the road for people who have old barns. And it's that extra structure that they're not maintaining is that eventually sometimes their homeowners will drop them and say they need to do something about it or what have you. So they, you know, they need to, you know, you want people to keep up with those structures.
Because insurers look at it and they say, ooh, that thing is going to fall down
tomorrow. Sure.
You got to fix it.
And I also would say, just as far as fire goes, I always advise people, put a smoke detector in your barn connected to your house.
Okay. Did you want to jump back in, Beverly?
I do. I just wanted to say what Ian said. Sometimes people move to New Hampshire, and that Patty was a perfect case in point, who said she moved up from Massachusetts to North Sutton, and she just bought this beautiful property, and she loved the barn. She just, even though she's just using it for storage, that's important. I also wanted to mention the multi-generational farm properties that I'm finding a lot of third, fourth, fifth generation folks are coming to me to say, how can I preserve this barn? It's been in our family for hundreds of years. And I just feel, you know, they feel so connected to their property. They just want to preserve it as best they can.
Lots of emails and calls coming in. And again, you can email us, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Emily in Peterborough writes, well-designed solar system and energy production can help pay for the preservation of some old barns and produce clean local energy for the farm or community too. Ian, real quick, I'm thinking of a big barn roof. There's probably plenty of room for solar panels
there. That's right. We've actually had solar panels installed on two barns that we've worked on because they were south facing, you know, and they were great for that purpose. You want to make sure the structure is okay and all those for those purposes, but they do. They are great solar installation platforms.
Let's take a call, and this is Nancy in Alton. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. Nice to talk to you. I love your show.
Good. Go ahead, Nancy.
I have a nice old barn, and in the back, it was built in several different times, I think, and added on. And I have stalls back there in which my dog has dug up, you know, very big vertebrae from maybe animals that were there, cows.
Oh, yikes. Okay, sure.
Yeah, and very interesting. I love the history of it. Like the other caller said, I love the smell of it, the old wood, the, you know, just the uniqueness of it. But I also, the house is one of the oldest on the street, and it has since, you know, many houses have gone up in the neighborhood, and I'm close to town where it's no longer zoned for farm animals. And I was wondering if there was an opportunity to get that grandfathered in to have some goats and chickens if we have old barns so that we could kind of show it off and show the rural history of the place.
Wow. Okay, Nancy, this is a great question. And she's right. Zoning does change back and forth, actually, in Concord now. Parts of the city are zoned for chickens, whereas they weren't a couple years ago. Go ahead, John.
Well, I think she needs to go to our town officials and look into this. I'm on the Bosquin Ag Commission, and we serve as kind of a conduit between the public and the town on working out these kind of issues. In the town of Bosquin, we've actually helped some people either get a variance or exception so they could do this. So this really is a town politics type of thing, and she needs to follow the right procedures, and she might be able to get some variances or exceptions to do this.
What do you think? So interesting that you say town by town, because you're right, John, you know, certain things are, you know, really up to the municipality to take care of. Are some towns more open to barns and barn usage than others?
Well, they are. I mean, I live in Bosquin, and we have a thing on our sign as you enter town that we support local agriculture. And Bosquin is really trying to reach out and welcome new and small farmers.
Because the local food movement is huge in New Hampshire.
Right, but some towns aren't that user-friendly that way, and especially if they're more suburban. It just, you get that, we deal with a lot of questions and issues with, you know, neighbors not liking what's going on next door with a small farm. So if you've got a very clustered area, it may be hard to do this.
Well, and if I have a flower bed that I've been tending for 3 months and somebody's goats get into my flower bed, then, yeah, I'm not happy. And sometimes when people have roosters, that's not good to be right. Woken up at 4 o'clock in the morning. So I actually appreciate that. Thank you so much for that call, Nancy. And we'll take a lot more of your calls after a break. So hang on the line, 1-800-892-6477. Email is great, exchange@nhpr.org. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, it's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. And wow, what a week. Primary elections, unity breakfasts, a veto override day at the State House, and a lot more. So be sure to join us tomorrow morning for the weekly News Roundup live at 9. This hour, why preserve old barns, the costs of doing so, and modern uses for these historic structures. We're finding out a lot more, and let's get your stories and questions in. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Beverly Thomas, Ian Blackman, John Porter, lots more people with questions and comments. So let's go right back to the listeners. Mike is calling from Northwood. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Love your show. I plan to share it with my students today in class. My question, I have a friend who has a nice, beautiful barn, and I've used it for storage. And when I stored my vehicle recently, there was a lot of moisture, and I ended up getting mildew and mold in the vehicle. And I was wondering if your guests could provide any insights or solutions how I might be able to prevent that. And also I wanted to mention, I saw John speak. I'm a member of the Northwood Historical Society, and he had an incredible show on barns, a presentation. I highly recommend listeners to seek out future presentations. He does an excellent job. He's very passionate about it as well.
There you go, Mike, and thanks. And on our website, by the way, nhpr.org/exchange, we've got links to all the work that our guests do. So if you want to find out more about that, it's right there on the website. What about that, John? He seems to be saying there's certain things you should not store in a barn.
Well, ironically, probably one of the things is animals, which was originally built for.
That is ironic.
Because animals give off a lot of moisture, because the urine, the manure, the automatic watering and water leaking, and you can't get equipment in to clean. So that's why earlier I said I would put animals in an outdoor structure and use it for dry storage. But in the specific things that he's asking about, you know, even sometimes vehicles that leak fluids, that might not be good. Things that hold a lot of moisture, things that could be flammable, you know, those are the things I would avoid. For his specific question, he might want to just look into better ventilation of the barn, and that may mean either a functional cupola, if there's one there, to get that opened up. If not, end vents in the peaks. But these barns do hold moisture, and he needs to better ventilate.
What do you think, Ian?
Well, so the other thing that you don't really want to store in the barn, talking about moisture, is lots of wood, loose wood, because that sort of encourages powder post beetle, which can cause damage to your timber frame structure, you know. And so you don't want to store a lot of wood in there. And if there is a lot of moisture, that's something you want to deal with down the road, because that's not good for the barn.
So as we talk about, you know, what you should put in, what you shouldn't put in, modern uses for these old structures, and before the break, you guys all gave some really cool examples. What's not an appropriate modern use, Beverly, in your opinion, of an old barn? What do you not like to see done with these old structures? Besides tearing them down, obviously.
Putting too much stuff in them. And I was up in a barn. I was in a barn up in Effingham, and they had stored an old fire truck, believe it or not, in the barn. And it broke some of the floor joists. So people have to be really careful about the weight they put in a barn as well, especially if it's an older barn that needs a little bit of work. So I do not encourage heavy vehicles to go into a barn unless you've had it really checked out by a barn contractor to make sure that's okay.
As a barn guy, Ian, what don't you like to see done with these old structures?
Same thing as Beverly was just talking. A lot of people who have an RV or something like that, it's got a nice tall doorway in the center aisle in the barn, so they'll take their RV in there and store it for the winter. It's not the best place weight-wise to put your RV, you know. So, you know, heavy equipment, but a lot of stuff you're just not, if you're storing stuff you're not going to use, then get rid of the stuff you're not going to use.
Oh, well, that's a whole other show.
That is.
Exactly. All the stuff people have and how hard it is to part with it.
Right.
Go ahead. I'd love your thoughts too, John.
Well, I don't like to see uses that add a lot of new windows and doors.
Now, why is that?
Well, I like the barn to kind of look like a barn. Now, I know this is a little contradictory to the alternative uses because you want to do things, but, you know, a barn can be made into a house, but you could be sensitive to how you do the doors and windows. Like, a whole lot of sliding doors and bay windows and all that kind of thing, to me, really take away from it. So I like to have people be sensitive to making that barn still look like a barn, even as they do their reuse. And that can be done. I mean, you just have to be sensitive to how you do it. Because I've seen some with, you know, a whole series of sliding doors down the side or something. And to me, that just completely takes away from the look as a barn.
So put the sliding doors maybe facing the opposite side of the road so you don't have to see them when you,
sure, just use,
when you go
you
by.
Can actually, today, it's quite the in thing to have sliding doors even in houses and within houses. So you can do some things that I think would look typical and not take away from the function.
Let's go back to our listeners. And Bill is next up on the air. Bill from Keene. Hi, Bill. Go ahead. Welcome to The Exchange.
Good morning, Laura. Thank
morning.
You for taking my call. Your show is of great interest to me today because I've recently become caretaker of my late aunt's estate.
Oh,
her
okay.
Home, yeah, her home was built in 1787 as a store in West Keene. The shed and the barns were added sometime after that. My late aunt had no money for maintenance. The barn is in pretty tough shape right now. There's been water leakage for some time, and it needs some love. And I need coaching. I need some direction. Your mention of the barn assessment was of interest, and I'm also wondering if the property might even be eligible for some sort of historic site recognition.
Well, and Bill, thanks for the call. And I'm going to direct you, Beverly, I'll let you jump in real quick, but I'm going to direct you to our website, Bill, because we've got a link to Beverly's organization, the New Hampshire Preservation Alliance, again, nhpr.org/exchange. But just a little getting started on this idea of coaching, and I appreciate what he says. I inherited this property. She didn't have a lot of money. It kind of fell into disrepair. Not her fault. Now what?
Right. And I do get a lot of calls.
I bet you do.
Of people similar to Bill who've recently acquired a property for whatever reason. And Bill, I'd be happy to talk to you. Feel free to send me an email or give me a call at the office, at the New Hampshire Preservation Alliance office. In terms of state register, you could go to actually the New Hampshire Division of Historical Resources website. They have a whole bunch of information on state and national register listings there that can help you.
Let's take another call. This is Evan in Concord. Hi, Evan. Go ahead. You're in The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for arranging to have me call in. My name's Evan Mulholland. I work at Environmental Services in the Air Resources Division, Compliance Bureau. And I just wanted to make sure that people were aware of a couple things about barns or really any old buildings. The first one is if you're going to be doing any renovations or if you're going to end up demolishing a barn or a structure like this, you really have to get a survey done for asbestos. Asbestos is commonly found in barns, old buildings, particularly siding, transite siding, any sort of boiler pipes. Insulation can have asbestos. And if the barn has had a replacement roof with asphalt, shingles or some sort of rolled roof that often has asbestos in it. So that's required. And then second is if you're going to end up, you know, demolishing the barn, taking it down, you have to first get the asbestos abated. And second, make sure that you or anyone else isn't going to put it in a fire. We have a ban on burning any sort of C&D, we call C&D debris, construction and demolition debris. And that would include any boards or timbers from a barn.
Wow. Thank you for the call, Evan. And Ian, this is right up your alley. And I'm wondering what you think about some of the points he makes. I'm also putting myself in the position of like a new barn owner, like the caller who just acquired one, and thinking, oh, my goodness, I hadn't even thought about that.
Right. Well, so the other thing is painted. I mean, you'll have lead paint on some of the outside of the structure and stuff like that. And you need to take care of those things and make sure you dispose of them properly. But the other thing that people should be aware of in dealing with old barns is the animals that have been in that barn, and sometimes that could be, you know, squirrels and raccoons and stuff and bats, and that when you're even just sweeping the floor or cleaning up the barn, you need to be aware of those things. You need to wear masks and appropriate things because the dried fecal matter from those animals is not something you want to breathe in. So people should always be aware of that and cleaning their barns out.
Wow. So listening to you talk and listening to Evan talk, I'm thinking, maybe I don't even want to mess with an old barn if I have one. It sounds like too much trouble.
Well, I mean, not that big a deal. It's just one of those things you keep in your mind. You know, they're still obviously beautiful structures, well worth saving.
What do you think about that, Beverly?
Well, I appreciate Evan's call because people think if they don't want their barn, they're just going to tear it down. It's going to go away and it's not going to cost them any money. Sometimes doing all that will cost them more money than actually repairing the barn.
Ian?
So I just looked at a barn yesterday in Nottingham, and that was a huge barn. And we were talking with the owner about the sort of paths he needed to take to restore that barn. If he needed to do some, he had some structural issues as far as drainage and what have you. But if he did nothing, and let's say someday that barn deteriorated to the point that he needed to take it down, the cost of taking down a structure like that would range up to $35,000.
Oh my goodness!
Sure, I mean a big barn. You think about that. So the removal of those structures, in comparison to taking care of them, sometimes taking care of them is a good idea.
Let's go back to our callers, and Gretchen's calling from Grafton. Hi, Gretchen. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I moved here in 1978, and one of the criteria that I had was that the property had to have a barn. I was really dismayed to find how few barns were left standing even at that time. I did acquire property that not only has a freestanding barn, but it also has a barn attached to the house, which I have not heard addressed today, and I didn't know whether some of the the Historical Preservation Alliance and other resources address those barns also. And talking about my barn is used for animals. I do welcome bats. That's the freestanding barn. And then also it has been equipped because it had cows in it one time with water. And it doesn't have any of the environmental things that was sort of brought up as far as the disposal, because I have made certain that through the years since I have owned it, that I, when I do work on it, I do it back in kind of what it originally was. And so it is still with the old beams and with the clapboards.
Wow. Gretchen, thank you for the call. And, you know, we should talk about this a little bit, John. Do some of the particulars that we've been talking about change when that barn is attached to the house?
Well, I don't know exactly what she has there. It could be what we call, the big house, back house, outhouse barn, or whatever, where it's a connection of working barns. Or it could be what we call the village barn. So sometimes you'd have a house with a barn connected, and that would be for the driving horse, the chickens, one pig, and that sort of thing. And we consider that a barn right along with everything else. In fact, in our book, we talked about village barns. And village barns are very common throughout the state. In fact, once you hear about them, you'll start looking for them, because they're the little one-car garage of the Victorian house.
That's attached.
But sometimes barns were just connected just for the convenience.
Sure, it's
of
cold
going
there.
Back and forth. And then Tom Hubka has the theory that some of those connections were little small industries where people built either a place to build barrels or do leather work or something to add to their income. So there's another theory on that. But there's a whole architectural feature of barns with a connected barn.
All right, Gretchen, thank you for the call. A couple emails that I really want to share with you and get your thoughts. Barry says, in Franklin, my barn has become my veterinary clinic. So we talked earlier about new uses for these old structures. That's cool, Barry. David says, I'm wondering if it's cost-effective to buy an old barn that needs to be saved and relocated somewhere else. Beverly?
I get a lot of calls on this.
I bet.
And I have a network of barn contractors that we deal with if there's a barn that needs to be moved, I reach out to the network to see if we can place it with a new owner. It happened all the time hundreds of years ago, and it's still happening today.
So they are movable.
Absolutely, yes. Usually disassemble them and then move them, repair the parts that need to be repaired, and then move them and re-erect them in the new location. There was a couple barns recently that have been successfully relocated. One was made into a horse barn, and another was just used for a family's farmstead. But they both, one purchased a historic property, but it didn't have a barn. It lost its barn to a fire or something. So there are reuses in terms of relocation, and it has worked.
Very interesting. Ian, have you ever relocated a barn?
We've taken them down and turned them into houses. Yes, sure.
Use the same old wood?
Same, old timber
frame. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, there's costs involved with that that are different than building a stick-built house, because you, you're going to insulate. You want to insulate from the outside to see the timber frame, and that's another issue. They moved them all the time in the old days. They moved them without even taking them down in the old days, you know. And they're inherently,
how do they do that?
Well, they're inherently very strong because of the timber frame joinery, you know, that they can take a lot of abuse and keep on moving. You know, they'd get them up and get wheels under them and take a lot of team of oxen and just drag them down the road. I mean, I'll tell you a quick story of a barn over on the seacoast. It was a small barn. Probably it was a corn crib, but the it was in poor repair, and it was a husband and wife, and the wife was really tired of looking at this corn crib that was falling apart, and her husband had an old truck that he had was saving and collected, and while he was off one day, she hooked a chain around one of the posts in the barn to yank it over, and she succeeded in yanking it off the foundation right into the middle of the road, and that's where it stayed until he got home.
Oh my gosh! Wow! All right, so that's a great question from our listener. There. Here's Jeff, who says, I am wondering if we have a state program to catalog and or identify the barns in New Hampshire that are rare examples of certain types of barn design. Jeff, thank you so much for that email. And John, that's up your alley.
Well, mine and Bev's too. I've written a book about barns, and I've attempted to try to capture some of those as photos in the book. And those of us in the barn circles, I think, know where these barns are. And then Beverly's done quite a bit about categorizing them. And then she said Grant. So I'll let her expand on that.
Although I did want to ask you about your book, Preserving Old Barns, Preventing the Loss of a Valuable Resource. You've got a new version of that coming out at some point?
I'm working on it. Yeah, I'm working on it right now. We have a goal of the end of the year, the first of next year, to have it done. But we're literally sending text to the publisher as we speak.
Okay, go ahead, Beverly.
Okay, in terms of a statewide barn survey,
there
is a volunteer program. If you go to the Division of Historical Resources website, they have the forms, farm reconnaissance form. So if you have an old farmstead, feel free to fill that form out and submit it to the Division of Historical Resources, and they're doing a whole cataloging all the barns.
So it's sort of ongoing?
It's ongoing, yeah. There are some towns that have completed their surveys, I think maybe 14 or 15. I know some are currently working on them. When we give out barn assessment grants, we require that form to be filled out, and then it goes over to DHR.
Ian, what's the best barn you ever worked on?
It was the barn in New Hampton, the one with the big timbers, the Union timbers. It was a beautifully built frame. So there were a craftsman that built it, and it was just a joy to work on it.
And what is it being used for today?
It is being used as I call them party barn.
A fair bit of those, actually.
Yeah, sure. I mean, a lot of times when people go to that restoration, they don't want to put animals in them, you know, when they go to that whole 9-yard restoration.
Yeah. All right. We could have talked a lot more. Ian, it was really nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Sure.
That's Ian Blackman, owner of Ian Blackman LLC, specializing in restoring and preserving historic barns and houses. Beverly Thomas, great to meet you. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
Beverly Thomas, Program Director of the New Hampshire Preservation Alliance, and John Porter, thank you for being here.
Thank you. It was fun.
John Porter, co-author of Preserving Old Barns, Preventing the Loss of a Valuable Resource. Again, check out our website, nhpr.org/exchange, for a lot more information. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.